A glittering dome sat on a barren plain. Underneath this vast structure, four mighty rivers traveled to its center, passing hills, fields, forests, and a grand city. Far in the northeast quadrant, amid an expanse of wheat, an enormous stained glass building stood shattered. An army of workers cleared the wreckage around its frame. Nearby, immense hot airships rose to, passed through, and descended before the watchful gaze of the aperture high in the dome's side. Far in the southeast quadrant, mist covered a country road. A dozen black carriages headed towards the city. I sat locked inside the third carriage. Pale shapes of trees stood beyond the morning fog. I understood better now why David Bryce refused to speak. For a month I had stayed at the Spadros country house, on doctor's orders. Yet I hadn't spent the past month simply sitting in the sun and walking the gardens. I had put a great deal of thought into the events of this current year, most notably Marge's death. My husband Tony sat to my right on the bench seat, holding up a newspaper, the breeze ruffling his straight black hair. Master Blaze Rainbow, who I thought of by the name I knew him first as, Morton, sat on the bench seat across from me, his brown derby hat in his lap. His fingers drummed on the crown of his hat. Then he took out his brass pocket watch and wound it. Tony's first cousin, Master Ten Hogan, who the men called Sawbuck, sat across from Tony. He appeared stoic and resigned, as if he had some unpleasant and unwanted task ahead. Between me and Tony, my little white and gray bird perched inside a white rectangular cage bridging the gap between the bench seats. I suppose someone thought bringing the bird with us to our country house would improve my spirits, but I had Tony buy it for me when we first married, so I would never forget I lived in a cage. One of Tony's men rode past the window outside, his pistol in its holster. My bird chirped in alarm, flitting about as if anxious to be anywhere else. I lay my hand on top of the cage, heart pounding. Shh, all is well. Tony smiled at it, his dark blue eyes amused, before turning his newspaper to the next page. Marja helped raise me. She'd always been kind, especially to my childhood friends Joseph and Josephine Kerr. Marja treated Josie as her own daughter, bringing her food, finding shoes for her, combing her hair. When Polanski Kerr IV brought his grandchildren to Heart Quadrant, Marja accompanied them as their housekeeper. But something went wrong between them. They sent Marja to work for Josie's uncle in Spadros Quadrant. A few weeks later, Marja sent me a note saying they planned to kill my mother. Her note never said who or why. The night I went to meet with Marja to learn more, Sawbuck and I found her lying on the sidewalk, shot, dying. My little bird fluttered around its cage. Tiny feathers flew everywhere. I peered at it. Might we administer a sedative? It seemed so agitated. Tony shook his head. The doctor said the bird's too small for dosing. An attempt might harm it more than its distress. He glanced out of the window. We should be home soon. My bird perched, its tiny chest heaving. One day I'll fly far from here. My eyes burned at the sudden memory. I put my arm around the end of the cage. All will be well. Yet we traveled from one prison to another. I had to learn who killed Marja. I had to get me and my ma out of Bridges before someone killed us too. Frank Pagliacci and Jack Diamond had to pay for what they did to me. David Bryce, his family, my informants, and Tony. But locked in that carriage, my captors surrounding it, there seemed no way to achieve any of those things. The headline on the front page of Tony's paper read, Coroner's Inquest. Zeppelin Explosion Investigation. Clubs Refuse Federal Oversight. The headline made perfect sense. I could see no reason to let the feds into Bridges. This inquest seemed merely a way to placate the city and the Travelers' Federation until the club family disposed of the culprits.